Welcome to the Fangled Cast, brought to you by Fangled Technologies, where we help you convert every person your company touches into a voracious advocate for your brand.
Hey, welcome back to the Fangled Cast. Today I'm with a friend from north of the lake in the Canadian wilderness of Toronto, from the company Marketing Spark. Before we get started, though, please reach down and click the subscribe button right below there. And if at the end of the Fangled Cast today you didn't like it, then unclick it. But we know that we want you to hear future and past episodes, so become a subscriber. So anyhow, let me have Mark introduce himself from Marketing Spark in Toronto, Canada.
Well, thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me on the podcast. Always exciting to talk about marketing. So I've been running my own business since 2008, and Marketing Spark is a fractional CMO for B2B SaaS companies. And what I specialize in is positioning, strategic planning, and tactical execution. So for SaaS companies that are looking to grow but do little or no marketing, I'm the guy they turn to, helps them figure out what to do, how to do it, and how to get the results they want. And I guess in some respects, I focus on how to help companies do marketing right and help them avoid mistakes, because that's the biggest thing that I fear for small businesses. They spend a lot of time and effort on marketing, and it gets them nowhere.
You know, the fractional CMO thing, I get asked about it all the time. And I think probably the best way, and tell me if you have a different model, but to me, the best way to describe fractional CMO is small businesses could benefit greatly from a C-level seasoned executive who knows how to build strategic go-to-market strategies, but they don't need them in the office 5 days a week and they can't afford them. So it's an opportunity for them to have that level of expertise at an affordable and also without a guy sitting behind his desk 4 days a week because they only needed him for one. Do you find that that's kind of the model that you talk about, fractional CMO?
Exactly. It's the eat your cake and have it too model. Yeah. Because a lot of small companies want marketing expertise and someone who's been there, done that, but they can't afford it. They don't want to pay the $150,000, $200,000 a year plus options plus perks for a CMO or a VP marketing. What they will pay for is a few hours or a day of insight and guidance, so they do the right things. Ideally, what happens is a fractional CMO will work with an internal team so that they can provide the strategic guidance, and then you get the internal team execute, and mm-hmm. It's a great marriage, and it's a win-win proposition. The fractional CMO works with different clients, and the company gets what they need.
Yeah, it's we joke, we use a different expression. It's a champagne lifestyle on a beer budget, but that's a whole other thing.
That's exactly it.
But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the options that are out there are, one, we hire somebody who really doesn't have that much experience, but we can afford them. And you get a guy who can do graphic layout and has an education and has a general understanding of marketing. Or you can go the agency route where they're not necessarily going to be part of your team. They're sort of an outside source trying to figure you out and provide you with the services that make the money that hopefully grow your business. And then there's the fractional CMO, which is truly a team member on a part-time basis. And then having that, all of those tactical tools and implementation, like you just described, become the offset that can be done internally once that strategy is in place. So it's kind of neat.
Yeah, it's a great middle ground because, you know, as you mentioned, you know, the most common route taken by small businesses is that they hire a junior marketer. So they pay them $40,000, $50,000 and they just say, go at it. But the problem is they have the tactical skills and they know how to use social media. Maybe they can write, but they don't have any experience and they don't have any sense of what I should do, when I should do it, how to do it in the right ways. Or on the flip side, they go to an agency, and the agency is, they're in there to make money. And they're in there to mark things up as much as they can so they can support their infrastructure. And they've got multiple clients mm-hmm. and they're not really vested in your business. They're mercenaries. Mm-hmm. Fractional CMO, we sort of straddle both worlds. We've got the experience, we're vested. We want to make money. I mean, no doubt about it, because we've got the experience and we want to be paid for it. But I feel when I work with clients, I'm actually vested in their success. I feel like I'm a part of their team, even though, you know, I'll work for them for 6 months and I'm gone. Yep. But that's what entrepreneurs want. They want a partner. They want an ally.
Yep. And they want you to participate in the success of what they're doing. Many times we even build programs where that's part of how we do it. That if if we're able to get you to this level within this period of time, we should be rewarded for it. Not, we're going to bill a bunch of project management fees, whether you succeed or not. But anyhow, it just, I wanted to kind of share that because so many people misunderstand what a fractional CMO is. I talked to someone today, I swear to you, he said, well, we have a fractional CFO, but it makes sense with the fractions with him because he does math. What is it? I think we're off point.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're right. The problem with the fractional CMO is a lot of people call themselves fractional, including fractional CMOs, and you really don't know what you're getting because fractional can mean different things to different people. Yep. Like, you could provide fractional services to a company for 1 hour a week, and that could be all they need. Review our marketing material. Let's do some brainstorming. Yep. We're doing these campaigns. Do you think we should do them or not? We're thinking of hiring this agency. Should we hire them or not? Or it can be a day a week where you're in the office for a day and you're sitting down with the CEO and you're brainstorming, or it could be more than one day a week. So part of the challenge is you can slice it and dice it any way you want. And a fractional CMO can serve you any way they want, but what they're giving you is they're giving you expertise and experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, we have engagements where we're actually part of the executive team. The executive team meets once a week, and that's the day that we're their fractional CMO. And that's the day that we're actually in-house and we do that work. And there's other clients where, you know, it's more of a limited engagement where we have an executive meeting, even a Zoom situation. But nonetheless, it's participating in that business as part of the company, as if you're a part-time employee with a vested interest in the growth of the business. So anyhow, enough yammering about fractional CMOs. Let's talk about your SaaS. Oh, right. I mean, software as a service. I'm sorry.
Software as a service. Yeah.
How is you find marketing software as a service different than, for example, marketing, you know, goods at retail or industrial supplies and things like that?
Well, in some respects, they're the same because they're something that provides value to help somebody get a job done. At the end of the day, you have a problem or you want to embrace an experience. And so you buy a product to make that happen. So that's sort of a one way of looking at it. On the other hand, you've got a very physical product and something that's digits, it's ones and zeros. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a utility, like you can't see electricity or you can see natural gas, but you know what I mean? But it's filling a gap in a way that is just coming down the internet highway. I don't see them being marketed differently because you're buying something. You're buying something because you need something to happen. You have a problem or a challenge or a goal or an expectation or an aspiration, and you buy a product to fix it mm-hmm. or to make it happen. And so in that respect, you know, when I recently worked with a company that puts solar technology on the side of buildings. And that was the same marketing challenge as a company that's selling billing solutions to fast-growing companies.
Okay.
Different types of products, but the same product. People are, you're asking people to believe in something and then buy mm-hmm. it.
So it falls under that same. I know we've talked about this previously. That you know you first want to understand who's that customer, what are their pains, needs, challenges. And then look at the company in terms of how they differentiate from all of the other alternatives out there in a way that matters to that customer.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that if we are going to sort of focus in on what's the difference between a physical product and a SaaS product is that physical products, you actually have to make them. Like the barriers to entry can be pretty high. You have to physically manufacture something. In the SaaS world, you know, the barriers to entry are pretty low. It's just coding, right? So anybody can, lots of people can code. And so, you know, and as a result, what happens is you get in every SaaS marketplace, there are dozens, if not mm-hmm. hundreds or thousands of competitors. So how do you separate yourself? How do you differentiate yourself from the pack? It's really hard. And I've worked with clients from a position point of view where you're looking for that really teeny tiny difference that mm-hmm. you can wave the flag around.
Yep.
I've got a client right now that is involved with medical records mm-hmm. and their product is the same as five or six major competitors. And we were like racking our brains about how to position them properly. And we found another service that they can bundle into their medical record software. And that's going to mm-hmm. separate us from everybody else. But that's the way you got to go right now, because it's really hard to stand out.
Yeah. And it's interesting. We talk about differentiators, and I think a lot of people don't really know what that means. But, you know, how is it that you're different than your competitor isn't what's important. It's how are you different than your competitor in a way that matters to the customer? If for example, your differentiator as a car manufacturer was that you had horse hair in the seats, and that's why we're different. Our cars have horse hair in the seat. I don't know of anybody who cares that there's horse hair in the seat. So, you know, it's that analysis and that strategic play is so important in the way that you're doing it. And the reality is the other part of SaaS that's always interesting to me, and what I love about that arena, is things are taken completely out of the mix that you normally have to be concerned with, which is, like you said, the making, the physically building, manufacturing otherwise of the product, although you do have to have someone code it, but it's also transportation, delivery, all of those things are no longer on the table, because it's literally your truck is a keystroke. Time to deliver, guys, send.
And that's the beauty for a lot of SaaS companies, is the margins on sales can be huge.
Yep.
You know, once you build it, I mean, obviously you have to improve it in time. Once you build it and you mark it up, you can make a lot of money. And that's why a lot of companies stay lean, because mm-hmm. they do what they need to do. They outsource sort of key functions.
Sure.
And then they and if they're doing well, it can be a very profitable business.
Yeah. I mean, I've been involved in you know, global trade for the industrial sector, where we were limited to how many countries we could sell to based on the number of kilometers away from or miles away from the manufacturing facility, because the freight would kill us.
Yeah.
Because with SAS, that's not one of the factors. It's, it's interesting to me, because I've done a little bit in your arena, but I lack the expertise to go out to the market and say, we are an SAS marketing company. We're not.
Yeah. I mean, in some respects, should not be a barrier to entry, because it's whether it's a SaaS company or a physical goods company, it really comes down to the fundamentals. It's having a product, A, that delivers value, because at the end of the day, even good marketing, great marketing, will get discovered, mm-hmm. uncovered, right? The product will be revealed at some point in time. If it doesn't perform, then you can have great marketing, doesn't matter. But what you're really trying to do is provide a product that delivers value to your customer. And what you need to do is know your customer inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that there's a lot of focus these days on marketers saying, you got to know your customer. And that's what it suggests to me, is they don't know their customers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of doing a little dance, because they don't talk to their customers. They don't talk to their prospects. They don't talk to customers after they become customers. Yep. And we kind of fake it. You know, we're guessing, well, I have my customers 25 to 35 and they make this amount of money. And my advice to any entrepreneur is, talk to as many prospects and customers as possible and really know how you're going to meet their needs.
Yep. There are many, many projects that started for us with talking to existing customers and asking the question, why do you do business with these guys? What keeps you here and not buying from the competitor? And then we talk to people who sporadically buy. Why do you buy from two different sources? What keeps you from buying exclusively? And then we look at people who left. They bought for a period of time and they don't buy anymore. And we want to know, what made you leave? And usually in that information, when you bring that data together, you find really interesting stuff.
Yeah, but the question is, Andrew, is why is that a surprise to many companies? Like, I've done, when I do positioning engagements, for example, I'll say to the client, I need to talk to 3 to 5 customers. And they go, first they're like, really? You want to talk to our customers? And I go, yeah. So then I'll talk to the customers independently, so they're not biased at all. And they'll tell me things openly about the company and how it could be improved. I'll go back to the entrepreneur and I'll say, hey, this is what I learned. And they're like, what? They told you that? And I'm shocked that they don't know that already.
Yeah. We lead parallel lives, Mark. Yeah. I had an engagement with a company that sold their products through a dealer network. And when we got to talking to the dealers, and the CEO of the company had an adversarial mindset towards these dealers. They're a bunch of lazy guys. We're doing all the work. They just a horrible attitude towards them. And when you talk to the dealer, they knew it. It was their problem with the company was that they felt like they were the enemy of their supplier. They weren't getting the support that they wanted. And when we really dealt with what the dealers' wealth of information that we could use, all of those, all the interesting factors of you know, your sales guys show up and they just want to do inventory in the yard and take me to lunch. I want help being able to sell these items. I mean, there's a whole interesting conversation that went on that was completely unaware, but 90%, and I like making up statistics, by the way, I don't really know. 90%, 50% of people are below average intelligence. I don't know if you knew that.
Hopefully I'm not in that group.
Well, think about it. but you know, 90%, a large percentage of clients that come to us, we start with who's your customer. And it's rare that they have a real clue of who their customer really is.
Yeah. And you know what the funny thing about sales and marketing is that the best way to do sales and marketing is your customers will tell you what they want to know and what they're going to buy. And that's marketing and sales 101. And frankly, I'm always disappointed that customers don't do enough research, ongoing research with their customers.
Yeah. I've actually had CEOs say to me more than once, we don't worry too much about that because we know what they need. We're the experts in our product, not them. And I mean, the ego behind that's always incredible to me.
What did Henry Ford say about customers? If you ask customers what they wanted, they would say, originally they'd say faster horses.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. But the reality is, most salespeople that fail when you talk on the sales side of things, it's because they don't know how to listen.
Right. Yeah. And that's a hard skill these days.
And they don't know how to ask questions that don't end with yes, no. How do you ask questions to really, really, really get the customer to open up and let you know what the real challenges that they have are so you can help solve them?
You know, it's interesting as a marketer, I think a lot of my skill set goes back to my days as a reporter. I was a newspaper reporter for 15 years and I asked questions for a living. It was just natural. You know, to just keep probing and probing and asking questions. Because I always thought that if you don't ask, they won't tell. And that if you ask a question and they don't want to answer it, they'll let you know. And when I deal with customers now, it's like, I'm just asking questions.
Yeah. Years ago, when I was living in Brazil, we were doing a project for a company that made a type of equipment that was used for in the painting industry. And it was a way of spraying latex paint as opposed to putting it on with rollers and brushes. So legitimately, a person could do the work of 10 and do it well. And we talked to companies in Brazil and they said, oh, that equipment stinks. That stuff's garbage. It's horrible. And we couldn't quite figure it out. And then it occurred to me, let me change how I'm asking the questions. So we went back to the same guys. Last time I was here, you told me it was horrible. When did you ever see the equipment work? Oh, I've never seen it work. Well, why is it horrible? Well, because you're in a country where people make very little money. And with a brush and a roller, I don't need to have all that equipment. So it's horrible. They didn't even know what the equipment did. They didn't know what it. So we said to them, and you know, what would happen if we were able to give you a piece of equipment that could do the work of 10, do a better job of it, and get you on to the next job faster? In other words, with this, you could do a job that would normally take you a week and 2 days with less people. Would that be of value to you? Could you sell more jobs? Well, that was interesting. And then we started to talk about the fact that, you know, you've complained to me that your employees get a little drunk at lunch, or they don't show back up, or when they get paid on Friday, sometimes the weekend is so powerful that Monday they don't come back. Equipment doesn't do that because it can be repaired over the weekend. Is that of interest? And you get into those kind of conversations. And before long, we were able to do some demos. And when they saw the demo, the equipment wasn't so bad anymore. And the paint companies who said, we don't know if our paint's compatible with those kinds of machines. We said, do you realize that if one of your contractors who buys your paint has that piece of equipment, he's going to spray 10 times more paint every day than he does now. Does that interest you? Oh, so again, it's that asking questions and understanding where the real challenge is and what the real motive structure is so important in building these marketing strategies.
Yeah. Ask questions and listen to the answers and you should be good to go.
Yeah, we always train when I'm coaching sales teams on the sales side of our business, is if you're not prepared 5-6 deep in probing questions, you're not ready for the sale.
Yeah.
You're not ready for totally the conversation. Agree. Yeah. So are there any particular really interesting projects that you think the audience would be curious to know where you innovated in a way to change the game for a company?
Not so much innovation, but just going back to your original question about a fractional CMO and what they do. A few months ago, I was approached by a construction company. And what they do is they put cladding on the side of buildings. So high-rise office building or a condo that looks pretty, has different colors, that's cladding.
Yep.
And what this company wanted to do is they wanted to integrate solar technology into the side of buildings so that the building became a solar power plant, wow, which is really cool when you think about it. And so they, all they had was the product. They had no website, they had no marketing collateral, they had no position, they had no marketing strategy. And so, and they wanted it all at the same time. So as a fractional CMO, what they wanted was a CMO full-time for 3 months. And that's what we do. That's what I did. I built everything within 3 months and got this company off the ground. We built a beautiful website. And it maybe not was innovative, but it was extensive. And I think that's sort of what the value of someone who has experience can do. They have the network, they have the contacts, they have the insight to make things happen quickly. And I think that's the key, is you want things to be done as efficiently as possible these days.
So a fresh grad with a marketing degree wasn't ready for that?
Not so much, not so much. But here's the thing about marketing, young people in marketing, is they're highly energetic.
Yep.
And they've got lots of questions and they're extremely curious and they want to learn. And if you engage them and if you allow them to be involved in making an input with decision-making, mm-hmm, you'll motivate them, you'll excite them, they'll feel like they're part of the team and they work really, really hard. And that's the thing. And they know that technically they know what they're doing. They just need some guidance. Mm-hmm. And my job, whether it's as a CMO or as a mentor or an advisor, is try to get the most out of people and help them learn along the way. And that's the key with young people, is they do want to learn and young people want to work hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I've found that the most valuable lesson to when you're mentoring young marketing people is learning the tactics now is how you get your hands dirty and get into it. But if you really want to be an executive and you want to grow and be a real marketer in the future, you've got to focus on learning the strategic concepts behind why people go to those tools.
Yeah. And I think if you can marry the two, if you can have the strategic guidance and the ability to get your hands dirty because you've been there, done that, that's an amazing combination because you can do a lot of things for a lot of different people at that point in time.
Yeah. We couldn't agree more. Well, we're almost running out of time. So I get to ask you my favorite question. What didn't I ask you that I should have asked you about you or your company?
That's a good question. I guess, you know, it's, you know, the question maybe you asked me is where do I think the marketing landscape is going in 2021?
Okay.
And my answer to that would be, I'm not sure. And the reason I say I'm not sure is that when things snap back, when COVID starts to retreat and we're all vaccinated, what I'm wondering about is whether we'll go back to our old marketing habits, whether we'll start going to conferences again, whether we'll start doing the same things that we were doing before, or whether what's been happening over the last year will be baked into how we now do business. Will virtual be the way things are? Will you and I communicate instead of going for coffee or going to conferences? Will we just jump on a Zoom call? And that's the thing that really makes me most curious about the marketing and sales landscape in 2021.
Yeah. The most common thing that I heard was, once we're all vaccinated, we're all going to get together in a horde until we're sick of each other again, and then it'll be a hybrid environment. That people just can't wait to get a cup of coffee over a table instead of looking through the Zoom window to people. I'm not sure that I agree with that. But
I think people are going to be cautious. I think they're going to. I don't think it's that. I mean, some people are going to be totally into getting together. I think a lot of people are going to be cautious. Personally, if I didn't have to do another coffee meeting again in person or go to another conference, I'd be completely content. I just find the way that I'm working right now to be efficient and productive. And I'm connecting with people at scale, which I could never do in person.
Yep. Yep. And the other thing is I don't lose all that time when I'm driving 4 hours to get to a meeting or hopping on a plane, or I'm much more productive in this environment.
Yeah. I think we're going to have to do it. I think that initial touch is going to have to be in person to establish that relationship and the trust and all the good things that go with a partnership. But after that, I think we'll be doing things virtually. It'd just be a Zoom meeting and everybody will know the rules of engagement and we're all good with it now.
Yeah, people are getting it. It's fascinating how much has changed in the last year. So anyhow, we gotta wrap things up. I really thank you for coming on today. This was a great conversation.
Well, thanks for inviting me. It's always good to talk marketing and figure out where things are going down the road.
Yeah, it's cool. And for those of you at home on your exercise bike, in your paraglider or whatever the heck you're doing, listening or watching the podcast, we thank you for checking us out. If you liked it, you've already clicked subscribe, so you don't have to do it again. But we would ask you to share it with a friend. I don't know, fax an old person, tell them we exist. And We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Fangled Cast. Thanks so much. Bye now.
Brought to you by Fangled Technologies, where we help you convert every person your company touches into a voracious advocate for your brand.